Arizona News Radio. The Sunflower Fire near Payson has tripled in size since yesterday. It now covers over 12,000 acres. The Gladiator has Crown King back in its sights. Fire Info Officer Debbie McNeely says blame it on unpredictable winds. And despite the danger, some folks are still remaining in their homes.
It's a mandatory evacuation, but we cannot force them from their homes. So all we can do is, you know, relay the importance of them to not only for our safety and our firefighter safety, but for their safety to get out right now.
Tucson authorities now are hinting that the disappearance of 6-year-old Isabel Celis last month might be an abduction. Last night on the nationally televised Nancy Grace show, Celis family spokesman Joe Vega says they need to focus their attention on leads outside the Celis family.
I don't believe it was a stranger. I believe it may be somebody that they know or that knows them, but I do know the immediate family's not involved.
Bob Baker, Arizona News Radio.
This check of York Haven Extravica service, once again, of McDonald's. 4 o'clock hour, look for an accident. Camelback Road, westbound, west of 16th Street. Also, we have a collision. Apache Trail Drive at Idaho, way out east. Look for a collision. Westbound I-10 at the Salome Highway. We also have another fender bender, lower Buckeye Road, this one at 99th Avenue. They're building something new at McDonald's in Phoenix. The new Daily Double Burger is 2 all-beef patties, shredded lettuce, onions, tomato, and mayo for just $1.99 and at a limited time offer. Here's your Wednesday forecast.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. 103 tomorrow after our high so far, 106 on Tuesday, and we're going to be cooler the next week or so. Then Friday and Saturday, we are mid to upper 90s with a dry cold front across northern Arizona. Jim Howell, Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
Thank you, Jimmy. Currently here in Midtown, we're at 103 degrees. Our next news will be in 30 minutes or when it breaks. Coming up, it's the Legalese Radio Show with your host, Dennis Willinchick. You're listening to Independent Talk 1100 KFNX. I'm Chet Reynolds, and you're up to date.
I'm back with Virginia Warren of the Arizona Department of Health Services. Virginia, now that we know the importance of getting an annual mammogram via the Well Woman Health Check program, what else does the program offer?
We like to take a comprehensive approach and encourage women to also get screened for cervical cancer, also known as a Pap test. Women should start getting this test done at age 21.
Getting multiple screenings done at the same time sounds like a great idea.
It is, as it saves you time and reduces the cost. To get more information on eligibility or to select a clinic providing program services, visit wellwomanhealthcheck.org.
I'm Professor Burke from the University of Farmers, where even the chaff is wheat, and this is a pop quiz. True or false? Finding discounts means clipping coupons. False. By sitting down with a farmer's agent, you'll get access to discounts that could save you hundreds on home and auto insurance. If you said true, put down the scissors and start saving on more than just canned yams.
We are insurance.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
To speak with a farmer's agent in your community, call 888-96-FARMERS.
Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
Mrs. Kirkland, you are out of order!
When I grew up,
you're out of order!
I want to be a lawyer just like you.
You're out of order!
Good for you, son.
The whole trial is out of order!
If there's one thing America needs,
they're out of order!
It's more lawyers.
Oh. And now the host of Legalese, here is Dennis Willinchick.
Well, thank you, Chet, for that wonderful introduction. This is Dennis Willinchick, and I'm here with Jack Willinchick. Speaking of sons who want to be lawyers, Jack just passed the bar exam.
That's right.
So when do you get sworn in?
I'm skipping the swearing in. I'm a by-mail kind of guy. I'm just doing it over mail, so it's in a couple weeks, and then I'm officially certified.
Well, that's terrific. So I have three lawyers in the immediate family.
That's
but,
right.
What the world needs more lawyers. Well, today, ladies and gentlemen, we have an interesting show for you lined up. We're going to be talking about domestic violence on Legalese, the show that focuses on legal issues. And many of you have probably seen an article in The Republic on May 13th, which talked about the legislators in our state ending early release for inmates in domestic violence cases. Basically, this whole controversy or issue came about over revolving around a Gilbert woman who's here in studio with us. Who we'll be talking to, what it boils down to is, as I see it, is that she led the charge that prompted the state legislature to close a loophole allowing early release for low-risk inmates convicted of domestic violence. Leah Pettyjohn will be a guest with us, and she is in studio. And with us by phone, we have Senator Andy Biggs from the Arizona Legislature to discuss SB 1213, which is what we're talking about, passed into law to help jail, again, domestic violence offenders and keep them in jail. Senator, are you with us on the line?
You betcha.
Well, thank you. Yeah, good to talk to you again. Now, let me focus on you. We have Leah Pettyjohn in the studio with us, but when did this issue first come to your attention?
Well, with regard to the transition program, Leah brought it to my attention, and I want to say probably sometime in December, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Leah?
November.
Yeah, okay, November. So before the session started, in the interim is when I first met with Leah, and then we had a chance to meet with the DOC transition director and other victims witness personnel to kind of get a feel for the extent of the issue.
Now, we should tell our listening audience, Senator, why were you the one that was involved? What committee are you on that would involve something like this, or did you just get involved regardless of being on a special committee?
Well, I actually represent Leah. She's my constituent, and I guess sitting as majority leader, and I'm not sure who gave her my name, but she came to me, and we had a great meeting or two, and it seemed like a really worthy issue. So,
Let's talk about the issue, and we are talking with Senator Andy Biggs, and you are the majority leader, is that right?
That's right.
Of the Senate, and so why, Senator, is this an important topic? Tell us your take on it.
Well, for me anyway, having prosecuted domestic violence issues many years ago when I was a young prosecutor, it seems to me that if you see someone who's going to the state penitentiary, actually doing prison time on a domestic violence offense, it is really serious. And it is so serious that it should not be the victim who's scrambling around trying to figure out what to do, because we've decided to give a break to the offender. We should instead be giving the break to the victim and keep that person in custody for the full length of the sentence.
Okay, and basically, let's get down to the nitty-gritty we'll talk to Leah more in the next after the next break about this. I know you have to leave us, but what kind of offenses are we talking about now?
Well, they can be anything from assault to stalking. It can be basically any kind of criminal activity that is based in and defined as a domestic violence offense within ARS 1336-01, which lists a whole host of offenses, like I say, everything from assaults to stalking to harassment, those types of serious things.
And this Senate Bill 1213 that we're talking about was actually introduced by you and Representative Eddie Farnsworth from the House. Both of you are from Gilbert, and it was signed into law by Governor Brewer on March 21. That seems to have sailed through without a lot of controversy, I would think.
Well, it's pretty hard for people to, although I was just checking the vote total before I got on with you, Dennis.
Yeah.
And it seems to me astounding that anyone would have voted against this, but because it is so common sense.
Yeah.
But
you're going to tell me that somebody did vote against it, right?
Yes, somebody did. Somebody did, that's right. And you know what, in the House, and I don't know why, but it was assigned to two committees in the House, which is kind of unusual as well, but it sailed through both of those committees, got a full hearing, and did well in all the hearings along the way. I mean, just think about it. We had already excluded other offenses that were defined as violent. Why would we allow a hole for domestic violent crimes to go forward?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I mean, when I read the article about this, it said, and I quote, after the bill easily passed the Senate, it met with mild opposition in the House, with opponents citing the effectiveness of the transition program. What are they talking about?
Well, the transition program itself is to allow someone who's going to be released to get out up to 90 days early, so we can try to get them placed in jobs and reacclimated in the community, get them set up with community services, so we can keep track of them and try to transition them to avoid our typically high levels of recidivism. So we also don't want people who are violent to get back into the community any earlier. We sentence them to a certain length of time to protect the public as much as to prison's not really going to rehabilitate somebody. But we want to protect the public, and we want to deter this person from committing future crimes by making him serve the full sentence.
Now, as I understand it, the opposition petered out. It said once the State Department of Corrections got behind the bill. So apparently this transition program they didn't see as, well, that successful, I take it.
Well, they see the DOC views the transition program as successful, but the odd thing was there were really, in the committee hearing, in the Judiciary Committee hearing in the House, there were two people who initially voted no.
Hmm.
And their explanation, their votes, was really quite frankly that it was pretty weak, in my opinion, because they were saying, you know, sometimes people make mistakes, and people, we need to get these people transitioned back into the community, et cetera, et cetera. And boy, I'll tell you, it sure makes your blood boil to sit there and hear people call intentional acts. Most domestic violence crimes require, as you know, a culpable mental state of either knowing or intentional.
Yeah.
And so this business that they simply made a mistake is not accurate at all.
And of course, they're preying usually on people who are, you know, weaker than they are.
Oh, absolutely. It's all about power. It's about control. It's about cruelty.
So, Senator, we've got about a minute or so before our break that we have to take, and I know you have to run. I really appreciate your being on with us, but I wanted to ask you if you could just summarize for our listening audience. We're talking to Senator Biggs, who was behind this bill that we're talking about on domestic violence. Tell us in a minute or less, if you can, what this accomplishes, what it really says, if you can summarize it.
It says if you commit a domestic violence crime, you're going to do your full sentence. You're not going to get a break and get out early. It also says to the victim, we want you to come forward. We are going to enforce our sentencing laws to the full effect, and you're going to be safe as long as we can possibly keep you safe. And we want them, and that, those are two important messages I think we need to send to people.
Well, couldn't agree more. I think it's great. We're talking to Senator Andy Biggs, Majority Leader of the Senate. Great thing that you did introducing this bill on domestic violence. Of course, what happens when they get out of jail or prison is another story, right?
That's correct.
We'll turn to it the rest of our hour. So
thank
you, Senator. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again. And we'll be back after these commercial messages.
Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
Since 1991, the law offices of Willinchek & Partners have provided the quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Willinchek & Partners focus on cases involving breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Willinchek & Partners today at 602-606-2810. That's 602-606-2810.
Barry Eisen is a corporate speaker and trainer who has worked with literally thousands of entrepreneurs and hundreds of companies for improved business and personal performance. Earn more money at your business, become healthier, and take charge of your personal life. Learn more about these effective, powerful focusing techniques from Mr. Eisen by going to BarryEisen.com. BarryEisen.com. Check out these tools that can put you in greater control of your life by going to BarryEisen.com. BarryEisen.com.
I have the answer. Call me for this link and you will call me back. I have the answer. Who was the dynamic leader that history tells us that when he went to meet his maker, that his eyes were not dim nor his vigor abated? I have the answer. I urge you, choose science and not celebrities in your pursuit of an active lifestyle well beyond statistical predictions. I have the answer. Is your energy level low and your health insurance costs high? I have the answer. Tired of buying grocery store produce from third world countries that have been sprayed with who knows what? I have the answer. I have nutrient-dense, locally grown produce, and so much more. It costs a few bucks, but it's worth $1 million. Charisma Culture is our name, and applying gifts is our game. I have the answer. 602-762-2601, 602-762-2601, 602-762-2601.
Lars Larson, weeknights at 10 on KFNX.
And this is Dennis Wolinchek and Jack Wolinchek, Jack the newly minted lawyer. So now he can officially speak on legalese. So now you can interrupt your dad.
I can speak on the record, yeah.
That's right. Okay, well, we're talking here about a very important topic, Jack, and that is domestic violence. And it's a topic that really we need to focus on because the stories I hear are just awful. And we were talking earlier today, Jack, you and I, about this. Leah Pettyjohn.
Yes.
You need to just pull that mic right in front of you. There you go.
You're welcome.
Let's talk about you for a minute. You are really the person, God bless you, that was the one who instigated the law that we're talking about now, which was in the paper the other day, as I mentioned earlier, and which basically provides that, you know, you're going to do your time under this SB 1213 if you are guilty of an offense that we'll broadly describe as domestic violence. So tell us about your story and how you came to champion this particular law.
Well, I'm a survivor of domestic violence. I was married for 8 years in a relationship with a man that was both physically and mentally abusive.
Can I stop you? I mean,
sure.
I'm fascinated by this, really, because everybody who's been married obviously has disagreements from time to time. It's almost famous to say that you should have them. But what you had no indication of this, apparently, at the time you got married, I take it.
No.
Didn't see that coming.
Well, yeah, you do. I think that's the thing with domestic violence is there is really no black or white. There's no really explanation for why women end up in these situations. You can be very educated. You can come from the lowest of lows or the highest of highs,
yeah,
and still be subject to an abuser.
But, I mean, when you were dating, did you date for a long time before you got married?
We dated for a little over a year.
And you didn't see any of this activity?
Some slight things, but, you know, that old saying, you know, I can love him enough to change him, and he'll, you know, love me enough to do that. So, yeah.
So you saw a little bit, but
saw
not enough
bit.
To really concern you.
Correct.
Then what escalated it?
You know, just after the years and going over years of being married to him, I think that they decided that pretty soon they quickly decide that you're a possession rather than a partner to them. And so they're going to treat you as a possession.
Okay. Now, were you working outside the home?
I didn't for the first little while, and then I started working outside the home.
Okay, so that gave you some respite, some independence.
It did. It did. But he certainly didn't want to talk about my independence. He did not want to discuss my job. My outside life outside of our marriage was of zero interest to him whatsoever. So, yeah.
So just, if you don't mind talking about this, tell our audience, how did this, because I think it's helpful, how did this then escalate to where he suddenly started becoming physically abusive to you?
You know, when I would stand up to him, a lot of times if I would get back in his face, I guess, for lack of better description, but that's when he would show me that he was much bigger than I. He weighed about 240 pounds. I weigh about 120. And he was quick to make sure that I understood how much bigger and stronger he was and that he was in control.
What did he do for a living?
He worked in construction.
I see. Okay, so he would come home and something would cause an argument, and then he would physically take it out on you?
Most often the arguments would be caused over something that I had going on outside the home, such as my family, my sisters,
my
friends.
Did he do this in front of your children?
He did. He did. He got a little crazy in front of my kids a couple of times, never anything directed at them. Prior to when I was pregnant with my youngest daughter, he got in my face. My oldest child saw that happened. And I had multiple restraining orders. And then that's with domestic violence. That's the hardest part for people to understand what domestic violence is. The victim generally goes back multiple times before they
That's something I want to talk to you about because
disconnect.
I hear that a lot, as I'm sure our listeners do. Why do you think that is?
I think you're scared. For me, financially, I thought that I couldn't do it by myself. He convinced me that I, you know, that nobody else would ever want me. He also said things like, "No one will ever have you." So he did. He did many different things that would keep
psychological.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Warfare.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then this escalated obviously to a point where it was of no return at that point.
That's correct. I had gone through over and over scenarios in my mind of how I was going to get out of this relationship. And he always said that he wouldn't leave. So it came to a head one morning on July 9th of 2009, and we were having an argument And I was getting ready for work, and he was sleeping, and he decided that he didn't want me to go to work. And he came in the bathroom, took my belongings through them, broke my makeup, my stuff, and broke my phone, did some other things. And I told him that I hated him. And the moment I said I hated him, he grabbed a hold of me from behind and began to choke me. The next thing I remember being on the ground and standing up, and he looked at me and said, "See what you made me do?"
Yeah.
It was my fault.
Yeah, it was your fault.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you... And we were talking about this a little bit during the break, but when you call the police in a scenario like that, a lot of people don't realize, sometimes the police will not come out on a domestic violence claim. I remember when I was a prosecutor, it was always a problem. So unless you actually have an order of some kind, they generally won't even do anything. They'll just say it's domestic violence and ignore it.
Well, fortunately for me, I live in the city of Gilbert, and they did respond each and every time that I ever called the police. They did come.
Even without a prior
order? Even without
order.
A restraining order, yeah.
So what would they do when they came?
Well, in the last incidents, Jim actually ran. He took off running, and he left the house with no shoes, grabbed his keys, jumped in his truck, and left. So when the officer arrived on scene, it was just me. He took a report. He took some pictures. I had some scrapes on my knees where he had flung me across the room, marks on my throat, so on and so forth. So he took some – he took the report, and then he looked at me and said, you know, what are you going to do? Because, you know, it is up to the victim to then go ahead and follow through. So he advised me to get a restraining order, how I could keep my ex-husband from the home. So I did. I went to the police or to the court system, and I contacted the advocate there, and she helped me a little bit, and I got a restraining order.
This is a justice court?
It was the municipal court through Gilbert. Mm-hmm.
Municipal court.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's get into that. So the police take the report, but what do they do with it then when you said, yes, I do want to go forward? Did they actually pursue it?
Yeah, they did. They did. They draw charges. I don't remember the exact charges. A domestic violence charge, maybe a battery. I'm not exactly sure what that charge entailed.
He had no prior offenses, no felonies on his record?
No, he did not have any felonies.
Okay,
no.
So this is the only thing. So that really, really must have sent him through the roof when you actually brought charges against him.
Yeah, it did. It did. It, you know, he, I don't know. I think.
But what happens then? You're living in the same home.
Well, I had him removed from the home when I got the restraining order.
Okay, so where does he go?
I really didn't care at that point.
So you didn't see him at that point?
Not for a couple of days. He was hiding. He wouldn't let the police get a hold of him. I couldn't get the restraining order served. It took some work to have that done. I was finally able to have that served on him. And then once it was served that night, he broke that restraining order 5 times.
And what do you do about that?
I called the police each and every time. And what happens is the unfortunate part with domestic violence is that you can see a different officer each time you call in the matter of hours. There's, you know, whoever responds to the call. So after that night,
it could be too late.
Right. Well, it was too late because I had stayed at my sister's. When I got back to my house that morning, I noticed that he had actually taken a box cutter and sliced all my clothing in my closet. So I had nothing to wear.
I know this happens all the time, particularly when I was a young lawyer. People in that situation ask me, well, what do? I get this restraining order, but by the time the police come,
right.
it's too late.
Well, it was a lot of
And there's not a good answer for that.
That's true. So I went to my advocate at the city of Gilbert, and I took those 5 police reports that I had collected from that night, and I put them in front of her. I said, what do I do? And Dina said, you need to go down to the police department and request to speak to a sergeant. So I marched myself down to the police department, which is adjacent to the city of Gilbert court system, and spoke to a sergeant. I had one sergeant came out, Sergeant Beatty. He's since retired, and Sergeant Kruger soon followed that. And I laid out in this case these 5 5 items that where he had broken the training order, and they immediately went into, oh my gosh, we have failed a member of our community, and they just picked up the ball from there. And I continued to work with them.
I was going to ask you, why didn't they just arrest him in the first place when he ran away? They should have really pursued him, shouldn't they?
Well, they should have pursued him. I don't know. It's
that's the problem. These guys don't get pursued. The police take their time filing the report, or the county in charging. And by that time, they've already violated these restraining orders, could have killed somebody.
Right.
Now, Jack and I did a show. Remember this, Jack, on that, what was it, that deadly situation where, you know, you can stop somebody from entering your home?
Oh, the Stand Your Ground Law.
Stand Your Ground Law,
yeah.
That's it. And this is an issue because people in that situation need to defend themselves.
Absolutely.
But then they're afraid that if they do, they'll get charged with a crime.
Right.
So there's all these Stand Your Ground laws now, which are in vogue now, which are basically, if I recall correctly, saying that
we've got one. Yeah.
Yeah. What does it say again? That if you have a situation like that and you defend yourself.
Right. You can use deadly force.
Yeah.
It's,
well, unfortunately, with the law, the way the law is written, it's all reactive. There's nothing proactive you can do about the law. There has to be a crime committed before they can do anything.
That's the problem.
So you can intend, and there might be some intent there, but what really has the law been broken? And that's where the police department really has their hands tied. So if you file a restraining order and you're able to have that on your side, and the police actually have that to go off of, if he comes within a certain distance of me, then they're able to
make an
arrest.
All right, real quickly before we take our break, tell us then the rest of the story. We've got about 2 minutes.
So I contacted the police department. We worked for the next 2.5 years back and forth with him reoffending.
What led to this law?
I got a call. I have been checking him out on data inmate search and making sure that I knew when he was going to be released, and saw that he was to be released in March, actually.
Early.
Earlier than even what SB 1213 prevented. He was just subject to, he had earned some credit time, so I wrote a letter to the warden and said, hey, look, can you take into consideration the number of charges that this man has? He may have been convicted only of aggravated harassment, but he's been through municipal court, he's been through superior court, he's been through probation.
Okay, so we've got about a minute. So tell us how it led you to find your way to Senator Biggs.
Well, on March 9th, I received a call that he was going to be released on this transition program. And when I found that out, I actually had my letter of dispute from the March 9th release date moved over to dispute this transition program. So it did. It moved over. Once I figured out that that was the case and that was able to be done, I knew that there was other victims out there that wouldn't either have the same support system that I did or even be notified.
Is this law going to affect him and his release?
No, not now.
Yeah,
no.
Too bad.
No.
So he's already out?
Well, he'll be out in May.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll come back to this fascinating topic of domestic violence and SB 13? Is that right? 1213.
That's correct.
This is Dennis Wilenchek on Legalese with Jack Wilenchek, and we'll be back after these messages and the news break.
NBC News Radio, I'm Alex Witt. The defense has rested its case, and closing arguments start tomorrow in the trial of former Democratic presidential hopeful John Edwards. NBC's Lisa Meyer says the jury never heard from Edwards himself.
In the end, I think the defense may have decided that there have just been too many lies that he could have been confronted with during cross-examination. And also he could have been asked about some of the facts of the case and not had some really good answers.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says it's too soon for Congress to start fighting over the national debt ceiling since the next increase isn't due before next year. NBC News Radio's Bob Costantini says the issue was topic A at the White House today.
The atmosphere was cordial and the hoagies delicious. That's how White House spokesman Jay Carney describes the meeting the president had with congressional leaders, including Speaker of the House John Boehner. Boehner is bringing up the specter of another debt ceiling showdown if significant spending cuts are not made. Boehner's take is that nothing was accomplished.
This is NBC News Radio.
Arizona News Radio, the state's unseasonably warm weather this month can affect the unwary. Phoenix Deputy Fire Chief Frank Solomon says ERs are busier than ever with folks who fall victim to the heat and don't drink enough water.
We'll have a couple days here where it'll subside, it'll come down below 100, but then next week we're back up to 104, 105, so we anticipate the number of victims that will be calling 911 for our services to go up even more.
Fire crews still busy fighting several blazes in the state. The two most dangerous, the Gladiator, which is threatening in the Crown King area, and the Sunflower near Payson, which has tripled in size in just one day, now charring over 12,000 acres. However, there's a possible built-in dead end for this fire.
There's some unburned fuel till it gets to the old Willow Fire. When it gets to the old Willow Fire, we're anticipating that it will lie down. We're not going to see that active fire as we saw because the heavy loaded fuels have been burned out years ago.
Bob Baker, Arizona News Radio.
This check of York Haven Extravic is service of Village Inn. We still have that wreck northbound State Route 51 at Thunderbird. Also look for an accident southbound 101 at Baseline. If you look for an accident westbound Camelback Road at 16th Street, we have another accident US 60 eastbound at Ironwood. Craving some pie? Good thing it's Pie Rush Wednesday at Village Inn. Come in today from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. and get a free slice of double crust fruit pie or the amazing tin roof sundae with dine-in purchase. Village Inn, they rock. Here's your Friday, Wednesday forecast.
Jim Howell for the KFNX Weather Center. 103 tomorrow after our high so far, 106 on Tuesday. And we're going to be cooler the next week or so. Then Friday and Saturday, we are mid to upper 90s with a dry cold front across northern Arizona. Jim Howell, Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
Thank you, Jimmy. Currently here in Midtown, we're at 102 degrees. Our next news will be in 30 minutes or when it breaks. You're listening to Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX. I'm Chet Reynolds, and you're up to date.
Since 1991, the law offices of Willinchek & Bartness have provided the quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Willinchek & Bartness focus on cases involving breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Willinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810. That's 602-606-2810.
If you're one of the 15 million people who want to be free from chronic pain, then you need to experience The Joint, the chiropractic place, the new revolution in chiropractic care. Feel better with no appointments or insurance hassles with four visits for just $49 a month. Visit us today because when you're in pain, you want relief now.
On the southwest corner of Scottsdale and Shea in the Fresh and Easy Plaza.
For more information or to locate a clinic near you, visit us online at thejoint.com.
We will not be an easy target. We will never roll over and let pain plan our day. Or let an ache tell us what we can and cannot do. We will not linger on the sofa. Ask somebody else to bring us the mail. Or take the parking space closest to the door. But what we will do is take action. We will plan ahead. We will protect our bodies and fight back by moving. Lace up our sneakers and grab our tennis rackets. We will bowl. We will do our morning laps and bike ride through Saturday afternoon. We will walk our dogs around the block. We will pass up the elevator and proudly take the stairs. Because arthritis can't beat us if we beat it first. In the fight against arthritis, you need a weapon. What's yours? To learn more, visit us at fightarthritispain.org. This message brought to you by the Arthritis Foundation and the Ad Council.
Dennis Willinchek and Jack Willinchek on Legalese every Wednesday from 4 to 5 on Independent Talk 1100 KFNX. And this week, we are addressing domestic violence and a new law, SB 1213, which is now law, signed by Governor Brewer on March 21. And we have with us, we had talked earlier with Majority Leader of the Senate, Andy Biggs, who was instrumental in having this law passed. And the person who basically was behind this law, Leah Pettyjohn, has been with us talking about it. And joining us in studio right now, we have Linda Scott, who is the Vice President of the Child and Family Solutions at the Jewish Family and Children's Services. She's going to talk with us about the Shelter Without Walls and also about these topics in general. And welcome to our show, and feel free to butt in at any time.
Thank you.
And let me just come back, and we're going to have Connie Phillips on, Executive Director of the Sojourner Center in Phoenix. I'm not sure if she's on yet, but she...
I am.
Oh, you are on. Good. Great. Well, welcome again to our show.
Thank you.
And you are the Executive Director of the Sojourner Center. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, in Phoenix.
You are. Sojourner.
And that's a women's shelter. And basically, you know, again, feel free to add anything. We're talking in general about this whole topic of domestic violence that we're trying to address today in our measly hour, and we have about a half of it left. So let me ask a couple of quick questions, though, of Leah that I intended to ask. And, again, you all can jump in and explain if you like as well. But a couple of things I didn't understand. Prior to this law going into effect, Leah, how did it work? In other words, somebody who was convicted of some domestic violence charge, just like anybody else, would have to serve, I think you were telling me, 85% of their time. Is that right?
That's correct. That is standard.
Okay.
For any crime, really, that they give 100% of a sentence and then they serve 85% of that sentence.
Can they get out earlier than that, or that basically was the way it worked?
That's the way it worked. They could earn time. There's different things within the Department of Corrections that can be earned.
I never understood that. But anyway, all right. So, and then
So they set their earliest release date.
Right.
And then 90 days prior to that earliest release date was where the transition program came in.
Okay, let's talk about that real quickly because we talked about it, but again, I'm not familiar with it. What does that mean for our listening audience?
Well, the transition program was meant for first-time nonviolent offenders.
Okay.
Well, in my case, my ex-husband is spending his first time in prison. It's his first felony charges. So under their guidelines, he would fall under that first-time offender.
Okay.
He also was convicted of aggravated harassment, which is a nonviolent crime in their guidelines. However, he had been through municipal court multiple times over violent crimes. He had been through superior court multiple times through violent crimes, had been placed on probation, well, intense probation, mind you, where he checked in with a probation officer, and he finally continued to harass and harass and stalk and harass, where when he went to court, they brought him in, they gave him a plea, he pled guilty to aggravated harassment, went to prison on a class 5 and 6 felony, but unfortunately, they don't look at the entirety of the case. They look at only what he was convicted of. So he is a violent offender. If he falls under 133601, which is the domestic violence statute, he is a violent offender. And I believed in my heart that they should be treated as such. Therefore, they should have been removed and not been eligible for this transition
program. And
that's
what you got accomplished with
exactly
Senator Biggs.
Yes, sir.
And Eddie Farnsworth, let's not forget
him. That's
correct. All right. Now, to our new – thank you so much for that. And to our new guests, let me ask you guys, starting with Connie, if I may. Tell me what your organization does with respect to what we've been talking about. Because my concern was – okay, here you've got a great situation that Lee has explained to us, not a great situation, a classic situation, and this guy's going to get out regardless, and he goes right back to his old habits, one would think, because there's no rehabilitation, really, in the prison system for a guy like that, right?
Well, there's a lot of controversy about whether there's a rehabilitation system for anyone around this crime. It's a very difficult behavior and mentality to be able to have a treatment program that is effective. The role of the shelter is really for those people who need a safe place, because we know that these other tools, the order of protection, the legal intervention, they're wonderful tools and we need them, but so often abusers and offenders, they just aren't effective.
Yeah.
They continue to do the behavior. They continue to stalk. They continue to threaten. And, you know, an order of protection in the end is just a piece of paper.
Sure.
And it doesn't
exactly
keep people from showing up at your home, breaking
in. Right, so tell us exactly what your organization, Sojourner Center, Sojourner, does in that regard and how people can avail themselves of it.
So Sojourner Center can provide safe emergency shelter. So it's a place where a woman and her children can come into a place that is gated, that is secure, that has 8-foot walls. It's a safe place.
That's a wonderful
woman
thing.
And child to be able to stay.
And anyone can avail themselves of this?
Yes. It's for victims of domestic violence.
Yeah. Is there a charge for it?
No, it's free.
Wow.
And you can walk in with
how do you fund this thing?
We're contracted with the state of Arizona, with Department of Economic Security for about we've got about half of our funding comes from contracted sources, and then the other half is fundraised from the community.
Wow, this is a wonderful thing. I never knew of this, so I'm sure a lot of people in the audience don't either. So tell us, so somebody has the let's assume it's the husband has to be first convicted for you to accept them?
No. Anyone who is a victim of domestic violence. So they can self-refer. They can contact us. We get a lot of calls through the community information and referral has a contacts hotline.
Well, tell us the number so people can call if they, or make a note of it.
The number for Sojourner Center is 602-244-0089.
Okay, so they call that number. Mm-hmm. Assuming that the husband or whatever is coming back to their home and they're concerned, they can bring their children down
mm-hmm.
to this shelter. How long can they stay?
They can stay up to 6 months
wow.
in the shelter, in the emergency shelter. And then we do have a transitional housing program. It's not quite as secure, but it's also a gated community where women and children live together and they kind of watch out for one another.
That's amazing.
So you can actually stay in a safe community for about 2.5 years. And as you're hearing from Leah, it's not something that just goes away. It's something that you have to plan for and create supports around you for almost a lifetime.
So in that situation, while the person, you know, assuming it's a woman or children are in your shelter, They can also be taking steps to try to, again, either charge the person with domestic violence, again, mm-hmm. take steps to restrain them, maybe remove them from the house,
right.
et cetera, getting orders of protection from justice court or municipal court.
Right. And we have a legal advocate who can assist with that. We have lots of information, lots of referrals.
That's a wonderful thing, really. I was not fully aware of that. I hope people out there who may be listening to the show in that situation take, really avail themselves of it. The number is 244-0089, and that's the number of the Sojourner Center in Phoenix. Now, I guess there are other such shelters elsewhere around the valley?
There are. There's actually 13 shelters in Maricopa County.
So if they call that number, that will allow them to basically use other shelters as well?
Yes. If we don't have space at our shelter, then we will simply connect them with the county hotline, the contact number.
That's a great piece of information, really. Okay, Linda Scott, you are Vice President of the Child and Family Solutions at Jewish Family and Children's Services. Tell us what that organization does and where it's located.
Sure. Jewish Family and Children's Services is located just up the street, actually, our administrative offices, but we have locations all over the valley. We're a large outpatient behavioral health and social service agency. One of the programs that I'm responsible for is Shelter Without Walls, which is the program that's pertinent to your discussion today. That's a program that we put together about 13 years ago for the purpose of trying to fill some gaps in the traditional array of services in the domestic violence community. So we work with the shelter systems very regularly, but we're serving clients who are outside of that shelter system. So you do not have to have exited the violent relationship in order to be get services from us. One of the things that we do is help people plan carefully and safely to exit that situation. Sometimes that means we are helping them get into a shelter when the time is right and they can do it. Sometimes they are not going into shelter, but we are finding other ways to house them and work with them around safety and security issues. We also get a lot of referrals from shelters for clients coming out of shelters who need ongoing support and services to avoid going back into that relationship.
All right, we're going to come back to that. We're talking with Linda Scott. We're talking with Connie Phillips, Leah Pettyjohn. We were talking with Senator Andy Biggs on domestic violence issues and this new law that we've been discussing. This is Dennis Wolinchek and Jack Wolinchek. We'll be back after these commercial messages on Legalese, Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
Lars Larson, weeknights at 10 on KFNX.
Since 1991, the law offices of Wilinchek & Bartness have provided the quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Wilinchek & Bartness focus on cases involving breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Wilinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810. That's 602-606-2810.
If you are over the age of 30 and are serious about losing 20 to 30 pounds of fat, please stay tuned to this important announcement. A local market trial is starting now for an incredible medical weight loss breakthrough.
You
may be eligible. We are looking for 200 people to participate in this risk-free trial. This medically supervised protocol is not a fad, gimmick, or diet craze. There is no surgery, diet food, or lap band involved. It simply helps reduce cravings, resets your body, resets your metabolism, and empowers you to change your life. This medical protocol is considered one of the fastest and most effective ways to lose weight and keep it off. Best of all, you witness noticeable results daily. Be one of the first 200 callers and you are guaranteed participation in this trial. Spots are limited and they will fill up. To reserve yours, call now. 1-800-LOSE-FAT. That's 1-800-LOSE-FAT. 1-800-LOSE-FAT. This offer is limited, so call now. 1-800-LOSE-FAT. That's 1-800-LOSE-FAT.
Coming up this week on The Kevin Trudeau Show.
I'm Kevin Trudeau, The Kevin Trudeau Show, everything they don't want you to know about. This week, I have headlines you don't hear about in the mainstream media. Plus, natural cures for better health and ways to have, be, or do everything and anything you ever will desire. Improve your physical, financial, and mental health today at the Kevin Trudeau Show.
Sundays from noon to 3 p.m. on News Talk Radio 1100, KFNX.
Somebody's got to say it. That's why Neil Bortz is on the airwaves. Weekday mornings at 10 on KFNX.
I'm hiding in Honduras.
And this is Dennis Wolinchek and Jack Wolinchek on Legalese every Wednesday, Independent Talk Radio, 1100 KFNX, leading into the Savage Show. And we're talking about domestic violence issues today. Now, I was talking with Linda Scott, Vice President of Child and Family Solutions at Jewish Family and Children's Services. They're on 7th Street here. Linda, we were talking during the break. Want to make sure our listening audience is aware of this. Jewish Family Services is non-denominational in the sense that you'll help anyone.
That's correct.
You don't have to be Jewish.
That's correct. Our agency served about 30,000 people across Maricopa County last year.
Yeah, and I know I've seen your building on 7th Street now.
Our administrative office.
Administrative office. So now, tell our audience, because we were talking, this is very important, what you're focused on, which is a little bit different than our other guest, Connie Phillips, Executive Director of Sojourner Center, who deals with people in shelters. But you're telling us that basically you deal with people before they get to that point, obviously while their spouse is not at the home. Tell us more about why that's important. And also, Leah, you were telling us about your experience with that. So maybe we should start with you, and then we'll lead into Linda on that. So what happened in your scenario you were telling me about where this became critical?
Well, for a number of years, you stay in the relationship, and then you go through a period where you decide you're going to leave. But getting prepared to do that is a huge undertaking, and it is very, very emotionally taxing and physically taxing. So having a support system that would actually help you put that plan in action.
Now, did you know about these kind of support systems?
I did not. I have a great family support system. I have five sisters and a mom and dad. They're extremely active in my life.
Right.
So I had that. I also had the City of Gilbert and their victim advocacy program, and some police officers that I had made friends with through my case that were able to really kind of keep me going in the right direction. But this program that we're talking about, where you're able to actually help them plan to get out, is crucial.
Yeah,
it would have been good.
Actually, exiting an abusive relationship is the most dangerous time. And so it is really hard to do.
Absolutely.
And just the nature of that abusive relationship itself often has people very isolated, cuts them off with supports. Leah was really blessed to have so many active family members that were able to be supportive to her. Very often people are very isolated from all social supports, sometimes aren't allowed to work or don't have access to their own money if they do work, aren't allowed to have transportation without very tight controls over it. So exiting can be very, very hard, and it is the most dangerous time.
Right.
How do people learn about your service? You know, one of the things that I find amazing is that it is old as I am. I didn't know about, for example, the Sojourner shelters. How do people find this out? Do you make this known to police agencies?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways that folks come to Shelter Without Walls through police referrals. We have a partnership with the City of Phoenix Family Advocacy Center. Other family advocacy centers around the county know us. Shelters refer to us frequently because we also will provide ongoing support. And when they come out of shelters or even transitional housing programs, because very often if somebody can't make it and that abuser still has access to them, there can be a lot of pressure and that honeymoon thing happens all over again, and it's come back, I'll take care of you. And especially if you have children and you can't put food in their mouth or a safe home over their head. And when in these economic times, it's been very difficult sometimes for people to get or maintain jobs. So we're working very hard both on the front end and on the back end after shelters to help keep people supported, do very careful and intricate safety planning to put sometimes some pretty complicated plans in place to get
again,
people out of those situations.
And again, in terms of cost for people, your organization is privately funded?
The Shelter Without Walls program, we do have ongoing funding through VOCA, the Victim of Crime Assistance Act. We've had grants from various places, including the Federal Office on Violence Against Women, but we do an awful lot of fundraising for it. We always end up with about a third of the budget for that program requiring private donation to keep it running. Yeah, but we get referrals from all over the place.
Now, we were talking also about the legal aspects of this. So your organization, I think this is true of your organization too, Connie, correct me if I'm wrong, do provide certain access to either lawyers on a pro bono basis or paralegals that can help not only with the restraining order and the order of protection, but also with the actual divorce itself, right?
That's not true. One of the biggest needs out there is for representation. Unfortunately, we do have a legal advocate. Our legal advocate does focus on orders of protection, does focus on court accompaniment, and is able to provide assistance with utilizing all the self-help and all of the free legal services that are available. But the reality is that there is very little access to any kind of representation. There's some organizations that do workshops. There's some, you know, free advice you can get, but to actually have someone represent you in court, it's extremely, extremely difficult. And it's one of the things that in our support group, because we have a support group that meets every Thursday night, and it's one of the things that's a common theme is that women continue to be harassed by the abuser bringing them back into the courts, especially around if they share children for custody issues.
Well, now, Leah, you were telling me somebody actually did, a paralegal did help you.
He did not represent me in court.
No, of course not.
But he did help me put together my paperwork. And I think there's those services are out that they will help you prepare their paperwork. Paralegal, as you know, and I both know, that they are not able to stand and represent you in a court of law. But they do help.
And one of the problems that happens in the court system is often the victim has been cut off from access to finances, and so the abuser often will be able to afford an attorney, and the victim will not be able to afford a private attorney. I would like to echo what Connie said. She's right that the legal services themselves, the actual representation services, are harder to come by, very much harder to come by. We have relationships with some attorneys that will do some pro bono work for our clients. The ASU, the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law, Halley Center has opened a legal advocacy and assistance center, actually housed next to the Family Advocacy Center in Phoenix, and we work with them quite a bit too. But that issue about actual attorneys who will represent in court, we work hard all the time to get what we can in that regard. It's not a easy to come by service.
Now, did you, Linda Scott, or you, Connie Phillips, were you aware of this law that was coming into effect, and did you participate in any way in it?
This is Linda. Yes, I was aware of it, and there's a number of organizations in town who kind of track these things and send out alerts. The Coalition Against Domestic Violence was in support of this. Also, the Children's Action Alliance was aware of it. I'm on the Council of Human Service Providers here.
How do you guys
here.
Learn about something like this?
Well, you know, people like me and maybe Connie, I go on the legislature websites and I look at bills. I also read all the updates from the Coalition Against Domestic Violence, from the Children's Action Alliance. I'm on the board at the Council of Human Service Providers, and we have part of what they do is review upcoming legislation.
So that's
and
how
so,
you found out about
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I was reading that in 2010 to 11, there were apparently 856 victims of domestic violence crimes in Gilbert, according to the paper.
That's just Gilbert. That's just the ones that were reported.
Yeah, I have a statistic. In 2009, statewide, there were 48,935 reports generated. 48,000. And that's in the state of Arizona alone. Almost 49,000 reports generated.
Oh, wow. You know, I'm just wondering as I listen to all this, how does this, in the time we have left, we have just a few minutes, but how does this get solved in the long run? I mean, the Senate Bill 1213 is a great start. It means that they stay in jail long or prison. But at the end of the day, my concern, at least listening to this honestly, is, you know, they're going to come out. As I said earlier, they're not rehabilitated. You haven't changed them, basically. So they're going to find somebody else now, and the same pattern is going to emerge, and obviously has emerged. So what – I know this may be a esoteric, metaphysical question – what do you all think, one by one, is the answer to this whole problem? Is it education? Is it psychological training? What is it?
Well, both. The education is key, educating the community, educating victims, and then even go beyond educating the abuser as to what really abuse really is. I don't think that they view their actions as being abusive. you're my property, you're my wife, I can do whatever I want to you, it is not abuse, I own you. Mm-hmm. So I think the education is key, making sure that when they do come out of prison, there are services available to them, that they are ordered to take domestic violence training and counseling, and that they complete those.
Of course, in fairness, we should point out, I keep saying like that the men are doing this, there probably are some women who are abusive too.
Well, there are 85% of all abusers are men.
Yeah, well, we do have a few male clients in Shelter Without Walls, but it is not as common.
Yeah. Okay, we have very short time, but mm-hmm. Linda, tell me your take on this. Well, what's the answer?
It's complicated.
2 seconds or less.
Yeah. So everything that Leah said, I would second that, but I think we also need to find a way as a community to have better legal representation. We also need to do more education of our judges and attorneys. We need to have the family court and dependency courts working together, not separately, on these cases. What Connie said earlier about good programs for the abusers, that a lot more research needs to be done to find really effective programs there, and I'll leave a little time for Connie.
Yeah, Connie, anything to add real quick?
This is a social justice and a social change issue. Domestic violence thrives in silence. We have to talk about it. We have to look at it as this is a societal and a cultural issue. It's because of our environment and our culture.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to have to leave the subject for today. This is Dennis and Jack Wilinchek, Independent Talk Radio, 1100 KFNX, Legalese, every Wednesday from 4 to 5. And we'll pick up another interesting topic next week, and we'll be back on this topic another day. Thanks for it. For your help, all of you.
Thank you.
Appreciate
very much.
It very
Thank
much.
You.
I'll never forget
that moment.
As long as I live.
My first call up ever as a member of the National Guard.
When we got to the armory, they briefed us on the wildfires. They were getting dangerously close to homes.
Helicopters were going out to drop water on the fires.
Guys in the unit were preparing for firefighting with local fire crews.
At that moment, I got my first taste of just how important the Guard is to my community.
See how the Guard can be an important part of your life at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Rex Perry here. If you would like to be a guest on our radio show for free, you can go to our website, 123bz.com. That's 123, B as in boy, Z as in zebra.com. Send us an email. My email address is right there on the very first page. Just send me a synopsis of your business. Give me a little bit of background, contact information, and we'll get back with you and see if you could do a radio interview on the air on B2B Radio. That's the name of our show, and we'd love to have you as a guest. 123bz.com.
You're listening to Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX, Cape Creek, Phoenix, the home of Neil Bortz, weekdays 10 a.m. to noon, KFNX News Time.